Nongqawuse was a 19th century Xhosa diviner born in 1841 at a place known as Centane near the Xhaka River in the Eastern Cape Province. Nongqawuse's parents died while she was very young during the 8th Xhosa War of colonial resistance. She was raised by her uncle Mhlakaza, who was the son of a counselor of the Xhosa king Sagile kaHintsa. Mhlakaza was a Xhosa spiritualist who left Xhosa land after his mother's death and spent time in the Cape Colony, where he became familiar with Christianity. He returned to Xhosa land in 1853. Mhlakaza was to have a major influence on Nongqawuse's life, acting as an interpreter and organizer of her visions. In April 1856, Nongqawuse, at the age of 15, along with her friend Nombanda, who was approximately 8 to 10 years old, ventured to the seaside fields near the Xhaka River mouth to chase away birds from her uncle's crops. Upon her return, Nongqawuse confided in Mhlakaza, sharing that she had encountered the spirits of two of her ancestors. These ancestral spirits introduced themselves by name and began to impart their divine messages of warning to her. They had told her that amaXhosa should destroy their crops and kill their cattle, a source of their wealth as well as food. Nongqawuse claimed that the spirits who had appeared to them said, "All living cattle have to be slaughtered. Crops should be burned and cultivation ceased. The ancestors will rise from the dead." In exchange for obeying these instructions, amaXhosa would be able to replenish grain reserves and fill their kraals with more beautiful and healthier cattle. The ancestors would also sweep all European settlers into the sea. When Nongqawuse and her companion returned to their village and relayed the message, no one believed her. The spirits then summoned her to bring Mhlakaza to them, but would only communicate to him through her. Following this, Mhlakaza communicated the message to the Xhosa ruling class. Kings and noblemen sent representatives to Mhlakaza's village, and though they did not see the ancestors that Nongqawuse communicated with, they were nonetheless convinced by her prophecy. King Sagile sent his brothers Ndima and Xhoxho, and his cousins Gqwabe and Xhoseni. Xhosa rulers Phatho, Mhala and Dabai also underwent efforts to investigate the prophecy. I will now add more background and offer my interpretation of each prophecy, beginning with "All living cattle have to be slaughtered." During this time, large herds of Xhosa cattle were plagued by lung sickness, a bovine disease that had already left destruction in its wake in Europe. In September 1853, it was brought to South Africa through the harbor in Mossel Bay by a Dutch ship carrying Frisian bulls. The disease was a bacteria that was not easily detected and could lay dormant while simultaneously infecting other cattle. It crept on the lungs of the cattle as a yellowish fluid sticking to the ribs. When it spread, it putrefied the animal from within. It caused the cattle constipation, diarrhea, severe breathing problems that resulted in the cattle being paralyzed, unable to eat, and frothing at its mouth. It is no coincidence that the Xhosa cattle killings were a lot fiercer in areas where the lung disease had mostly penetrated. The disease was first detected at Uitenhage in 1854. From there it spread to Fort Beaufort and then to King Williamstown in 1855, where it made its way to the territories of the rulers such as Mhalo, Phatho and Magoma, until it reached Butterworth and spread in the lands of King Sagile in 1856. The disease was extremely difficult for the people to contain and manage. amaXhosa tried to drive their cattle into seclusion, fenced off pastures, buried the infected carcasses deep in the ground, and executed those who disobeyed the quarantine regulations and even those suspected of witchcraft. According to Timothy J. Stapleton, the lung sickness epidemic of 1855 killed over 100,000 Xhosa cattle. The sickness also probably inclined some Xhosa people to kill sick cattle out of fear that they would infect other bulls, driving up the cattle death count. This lung sickness epidemic and the attempted prevention of it undoubtedly made it easier for AmaXhosa to commit to carrying out Nongqawuse's prophecy. On top of that, the lung sickness epidemic also had a psychological effect on AmaXhosa. The infected cattle died an extraordinarily horrible death, and many Xhosa would rather kill their cattle than watch them suffer. In J.B. Pierce's words, first the affected cattle began to cough, then they gasped for air, breathing faster and more urgently. Yellowish fluid crept over their lungs, which stuck to their ribs. And as the disease spread, the cattle putrefied from inside out. The hideous way the cattle died may have caused AmaXhosa to believe that their cattle were wicked. The thought that Xhosa people were wicked and so everything they owned was wicked was a fairly common one. Nongqawuse's uncle Mhlakaza taught that everything belonging to Xhosa people was evil. This belief that all of the Xhosa's possessions, particularly the cattle, were wicked, could have been one of the reasons so many people were inclined to accept Nongqawuse's prophecy. It is almost as if the cattle's death was so putrid that it was beyond the bounds of sympathy. Crops should be burned and cultivation ceased. At the same time as the lung sickness, maize in the region was also infected by a species of grub that attacked the roots and destroyed the stalks before the corn ripened. An interesting side note is that maize was introduced to South Africa in 1655 by the mixed French, Dutch, and German settlers known today as the Boers. Before that, sorghum and other staple crops were the main source of sustenance in southern Africa. The ancestors will rise from the dead. The prophecy uttered by Nongqawuse was not unique. By 1855, about six or more prophets had sprung up and were preaching much of the same that Nongqawuse was. It is also worth noting that the obsession with resurrection in the Xhosa kingdom coincides with the Christian conversion of Xhosa prophets such as Ntsikana, Ngcele, and Mlanjeni, who made resurrection claims some time before Nongqawuse. In fact, it was Ngcele who had made popular the notion of an apocalypse and brought forth the idea of resurrection to AmaXhosa when he ordered people to abandon witchcraft, to slaughter all red cattle, and to destroy stores of corn. He too predicted the rising of the ancestors and new cattle. It is universally accepted that resurrection is a Christian motif, and although it did not originate with the Christians, it was they who popularized it among Xhosa people. Prior to the missionaries' arrival, AmaXhosa believed that life is a continuum. Hence, they always honor their ancestors and are able to maintain communication in various ways. The key difference between the male prophets and Nongqawuse is that they also led warriors in battle against the colonialists in the frontier wars. This was similar to the backdrop of the rebellion in Zimbabwe from 1896 to 1897. Masses of cattle and crops had perished due to natural causes, and a spiritual leader among AbaThwakazi known as Mlimi had risen to influence, leading the people to take up arms against the white colonialists who were seen as responsible for their losses. As previously mentioned, prior to Nongqawuse's prophecy came forth a number of similar prophecies. Some of the prophets claimed that they were in contact with the Black Nation across the sea that would come to the aid of AmaXhosa. Black Nation was a reference to the Russians who had killed George Cathcart in the Crimean War. However, these prophecies died down by March 1856 when the Russians made peace with the British and the Crimean War ended. The momentum of the cattle killing was sustained by promises of new dates at every interval that individuals demanded to see the evidence of what the prophecy declared if adhered to. This is due to Mhlakaza's preaching over the movement. People were criticized for not sacrificing the cattle and selling it instead. It was critical that the soul of the animal be preserved. The ritual of sacrifice was cleansing and purifying upon the village. The fact that people were not killing all their cattle was also blamed for the lack of the appearance of those who were promised to be resurrected. Blame was further laid on the unbelievers. Mhlakaza described the day that people could look to as a fulfillment of the prophecy. It would be the day when two suns would rise red in the sky and darkness would envelop with a great storm that the houses of the believers would withstand. On that day, the righteous dead and the cattle would rise and colonialists with their collaborators would retreat into the sea. This is yet another example of Christian influence in the story where believers who marked their houses would be spared during attacks. At each month from June 1856 to the latest June 1857, before complete disillusionment set in, it was the expectations of this scene that people waited upon. To make matters worse, Mhlakaza and Nonqabuse would use the unbelievers' actions as the logic that was preventing the fulfillment of the prophecy. Another example is when the presence of Inkosi Unxito was demanded as the prerequisite of the fulfillment of the prophecy. Nonqabuse and Mhlakaza insisted on his return to their district to be near his father's grave. He was an unbeliever, and though he obliged their requests, he remained an adamant unbeliever, such that he blatantly told King Sahili that Mhlakaza had nothing to show in mid-December 1856. There were rumors flying around that some of the people had already resurrected, with some making declarations that they had already begun to be spotted. But Nxito sent an unbeliever spy by the name of Makombe prior to the meeting to check on Mhlakaza, and when he had been caught, Mhlakaza blamed Nxito's unfaithful actions for the wrath of the risen people who had decided to retreat. When destitution set in, the believers engaged in violence and attacked the unbelievers, such as on the 12th of March 1857, when believers attacked the villages of Biki and Sam, killing the men and taking their cattle. Believers would also gather in groups to raid the properties of the unbelievers. As more pressure was directed on the prophets and they were threatened, Mhlakaza began to dissolve all responsibility and claimed that he received all communications from Nonqabuse, who was the medium to the spirits. In the aftermath of the crisis, the population of the British colony in Xhosaland dropped from 105,000 to fewer than 27,000 due to the resulting famine, among other things. Amabomvana handed Nonqabuse over to John Gola, and she stayed at his home for a period of time. One day, Mrs. Gola decided to dress her, along with the Mbongo diviner Nonqosi, and have their portrait taken by a photographer. This is the widely circulated image of Nonqabuse that most people are familiar with. After Nonqabuse's release from Robben Island, she lived on a farm in the Alexandria district of the Eastern Cape. She passed away in 1898. Many people who have encountered the story of Nonqabuse will no doubt wonder how such a young girl could be solely responsible for the destitution and breakup of the entire Xhosa nation. It's hard to say just how much power she had in leading the movement in her own capacity, because she operated in tangent with her uncle Mhlakaza, and there is little to no information about her engagements and words. To quote the prominent Xhosa writer S.E.K. Mqhayi, where did this girl find the strength to stand openly before men and describe something that was not there? For even if she was telling the truth, a girl had no voice or say among the Xhosa and commanded no authority. When the Tembu and Xhosa people dispatched leaders and messengers to establish the truth, they actually went to Xhosa and returned convinced that the cattle must indeed be slaughtered and the dead will arise. Was Nonqawuse alone responsible for this disaster? Were all black people not involved? End quote. It is so easy to vilify women. This rings true even in the story of Joan of Arc, who was discredited in a way similar to Nonqawuse. Joan started having visions in which she claimed to hear the voices of Saint Catherine, Saint Margaret, and Saint Michael. She said these voices commanded her to aid Charles in his fight against England and Burgundy, and to see him crowned as the King of France. Joan came to trial under Bishop Pierre for suspected heresy and witchcraft. Pierre, who continuously tried to make her admit that she had invented the voices, found her guilty of heresy and burned the 19-year-old girl alive. The key difference is that Nonqawuse was both attacked by the enemy and by her own people. She was used as a scapegoat by AmaXhosa and was a victim of the missionaries' colonial propaganda to undermine African spirituality. She was also used to cover British cattle dispossession and their gross genocide of Xhosa people, in which they brutally exterminated defenseless women and children in a similar fashion as the male warriors. Nonqawuse was 16 when AmaXhosa were finally conquered by the whites after fighting them in wars lasting 100 years. It is unlikely that AmaXhosa resisted subjugation for over a century, but the thing that broke them was a 16-year-old pubescent girl